Welcome to the Tortoise Shack Sunday Special. This is another one of these patron give-backs, I suppose we'd say. And we did it last week and we got a lot of good feedback, but we just said, you know what, actually, we might do it. Martin goes, we'll probably do that every fortnight. And then all of a sudden, you know, the worst week in the history of the government, actually, that was before Golfgate kicked off, and then we said, oh, we'll have to do it again. So we are back. We are joined by Vicky Conway, Dr. Vicky Conway of the Police Authority and DCU Law, Martin McMahon, unfortunately, and Linda Hayden of the newly successful Pack Woman podcast. Linda, you must be delighted with the reaction this morning.
Oh my God, I am like shaken. I haven't stopped crying. I've been laughing, crying, every emotion. I feel like I've just given birth, you know, and have all the hormones that comes with that. But yeah, it's been
I before we came on, I sent Linda a screenshot of the charts, and she's about 8 places ahead of the echo chamber in the podcast charts. I said, don't get used to it. Don't get used to it.
Human trafficking is the perfect subject for a Sunday morning.
Yeah. One thing I want to go to straight away is the anti-mask protest, or whatever phraseology we're using yesterday. And I want to focus on something, Una McGurk's position there, giving that speech, and what that says about her as a position and a member of the International Protection Appeals Committee and some of the rulings. And I'm not quoting me, I'm quoting Wendy Lyon, the human rights solicitor, who I asked, could I use these examples, and she said, absolutely, go work away. So, in advance of this, be careful when you're talking about an SC, as you say, but, you know, these are the facts. And the fact is, there was one case of a 15-year-old Una McGurk gave a ruling that she was coming to work actively in the sex trade. And this is one of the reasons for her, overruling this. And there has been, there has to be serious questions about, and Vicky, you know this as well. We spoke about briefly about it. Some of our facilities, our institutions, are institutionally racist. And if someone is there sitting making these judgments in this, that is just a red flag everywhere. And you know, Helen McEntee, Roderick O'Gorman, all these people, we need to see action on this now, surely. Would that not be a fair statement?
Yeah, and I think, like, again, listening to Linda's pod this morning, the idea that anyone is actively coming to join, I mean, it's just so ignorant, and it's so damaging and harmful. And to see someone holding that position, speaking at that event yesterday, is really worrying.
Yeah, it was, again, and this, and it's not, you know, this person holds various positions in other committees and the likes of that. And Linda, you did have that conversation.
Yeah, so she's also on the mental health committee as well. So, you know, there are a number of different things there that are very, very concerning, not least that her position is now untenable. Like, she can't be allowed to stay in that position. She can't be allowed to be within that appeals process. And also, like, anyone who has had an appeal heard by her, there needs to be a review of that, because what's happening is she's literally playing with people's lives, and she's standing on a stage in front of hundreds of, quite frankly, idiots, and telling them that the problem is immigrants. Like, sorry, what? You know, like, that's exactly what that march is. And I've sent my letter off to Helen McEntee. I have, you know, I've CC'd iPad in on it. I'm encouraging other people to do the same thing. I'm after setting up a template for it, for people to be able to do that. It's on my Twitter. So at Linda, okay, then, if you want to find it and send your own email. But it is not acceptable, and she needs to be removed. And also, there needs to be a review into any cases that she has made a decision on.
Very good point. And just the last point I'll make on this is the fact that, and we'll go into the wider controversy later, but it is fair to say that there's a number of people who attend these events yesterday who are brought in certain ways, you know, and you're led in, and it's part of it, you know. Anger fuels a lot of this, and we did the podcast with on anger, angrynomics as it was, and how, you know, righteous anger can lead into tribal anger and all of these spillovers. And some of what the government said that our elected officials did this week definitely would have contributed to people saying, well, if it's okay for them, I'm going in. Martin, you want to come in?
Yeah, I think this week in particular has highlighted that there are people within our state who don't consider themselves subject to the norms of our state. And I think that's fair to say. On the protest, I think the maximum figure was 500. That in itself is heartening for me. Out of 6 million people, there's only 500. Mind you, that is a better ratio than the 81 who turned up to the golf outing and didn't have the sense to turn around and walk away. So, you know, it seems higher up the ladder you go, the less sense you bloody have in these things.
Just to move on very quickly, the Pippa Hackett bill, as we're calling it, we put the call out to people on the podcast and we asked people and got a great reaction again yesterday. It's the one thing again that strikes me is that this has all been done. This was a Fine Gael piece of legislation that's now been attached to a Green junior minister or minister of state legislation, and it's been billed as, you know, look, it's forestry and who could object to trees? Don't you love trees? Let's all hug trees. And then we're losing our, you know, our right to appeal, our right to object, and, you know, access to justice. I'm not doing what attracted how she explained it so well to us. I'm not doing that justice, but I would say it's an important thing that one of the reasons we do these podcasts is because things like that slip under the radar, to call them out. And we really do. You've only got until next Friday, I think it is, to get your email in. It's on the pod, we'll have the email address with it. Do, if you have, even if, I think Saoirse McHugh summed it up and she said, even if you just want to say, I object to this because I think it's daft, just do that. Get the bloody thing in. You don't have to. Simon McGar did a wonderful template, and I'm sure you could probably copy and paste it and make that your own if you want, but just, if you can, get these things in. Anybody got any other points on that, or are you happy to move on?
There's two pods. We did a pod with Attracta before the government was formed, and she warned us about this and said this was sitting there in the legislation. So if you are going to listen, go back and have a listen to that, because it was really at that stage Attracta didn't know would they be ballsy enough to do this, but they have proved to be ballsy enough to do it.
Can I be very bold and ask Saoirse, since you're here, would you mind giving us like your I just referenced you there saying people should need to get in and actually object to this bill?
Yeah, hi. So I like, you were just talking about what
Pippa Hackett's bill is, we're referring to it, but maybe that's a bit unfair. I don't know, but we...
No, I've been pushing that as well. It's Pippa Hackett's bill. You have to own it. So it's it's obviously, he did great podcasts with Attracta, and it's this rehash of, I think it was Owen Murphy bringing it in last time round. But like, I sent in my objection yesterday, and I think, and Attracta addresses this, like, it's so difficult to read and it's so, I find, intimidating and overwhelming. Like, I'd say just even write in, say, ditch the bill. Like, even if it's not affecting you now, first of all, it's wrong. Even if, you know, you live in the middle of Dublin and no one's ever going to try and put a forest replantation up beside you. It's the fact that they're like, oh, there's so many successful appeals against these awful forestry decisions. How do we solve that? And the thing they come up with is, you know, making it more difficult to appeal these decisions. Well, that's just fucked, isn't it?
that's actually exactly what it is. And to go back on the Dublin point, I know Fred Logue has been pushing to get this bill ditched as well, because they work on in these cases and access to justice. And if you remove these barriers, or if you put up these restrictions around how you get access to justice, it can affect everyone. So, and I think Attracta said, whether you're in Dublin or you're in Dingle or you're in Donegal, you know, this is where it all kicks off. Thanks for that, Saoirse. I'm sorry to drag you in. I saw your name and I thought I'd be very cheeky and get your comment on it. Just Martin, one question, and it's go straight to you. Who's in charge of this government?
When everybody's in charge, nobody's in charge. There you go. That's where we are right at this minute. We have a ship that's heading towards the rocks. There's no hand on the tiller. There is a storm behind us. There are rocks in front of us and nobody's steering the boat. And bigger than that, they have lost the middle ground. They have lost confidence. We're heading into school reopening and everybody's terribly anxious. And to think for a second that these are really little smallies starting school, they're more anxious than we are. Have no doubt about it, they're more anxious than we are. And I don't think anybody's putting themselves in the smallie's shoes and saying, this is not really school. This is school with all the best bits taken out of it. And is this the best course of action to do? Should we split learning and socializing into two different spheres and work on them differently, where it's easier to bubble and pod in a community than it is in school?
I'm going to interrupt you because I want to focus back on, Linda, who is in charge of this government? Because I like Martin's opening thing, but I want to stay away from the schools for a minute because, what made me think of it is that I saw a report, I think again from Aoife Moore, who seems to be writing every second article that's come out in the country and doing a fabulous job, that said that members of the Green Party pushed Eamon Ryan to push for the recall of the Dáil, but he wanted it to be a joint statement because he didn't want to be seen to trying to agitate within government. And that worries me.
Yeah, it is. It's exceptionally worrying because, you know, when you go into a coalition like that, the idea is that you're going to be holding the other two parties to account, or it should be that you're holding the other two parties to account. We're not seeing that. We're seeing Eamon Ryan just literally counting down the clock, as far as I'm concerned, and nearly that he knows that they're after fucking up massively by going in. And so they're just waiting for the House of Cards to come falling down. I think Fine Gael things are going exactly how Fine Gael wanted it to go. I think Fine Gael wanted Fianna Fáil to screw up so massively, and they are. And the biggest thing about this is that we are all going to pay. It's not just one. It's not just one or two little things. This is massive. The amount of people who were probably at that march yesterday as a result of being so pissed off at the government, who don't know that they're standing with fascists or right-wing people or homophobes or racists. You know, all they know is that this government is awful and they cannot live through any more of this crap that we're living through. And they're literally handing people to the right. And I'm very concerned about it. Very concerned.
Vicky.
I flip your question, Tony, and say not who's in charge of this government, but is this government in charge?
Very good, yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, we have earlier in the week that it's capitalism determining regulations, not actually dealing with the real problems around meat factories and what's going on in the schools or whatever. Like, they're just like house parties. And then you have like senior members of government and the judiciary and the legal profession attending an event which is completely in breach of those same regulations. Like, this government is not in charge. It's not, like, you heard it on Friday with Liveline and everything. Mm. Like, the suffering and anger and sacrifice that people are making and they're enduring on a day-to-day basis for over 6 months. And we are not getting leadership from this government. You know, we're not being shown how to behave. We're not getting a sense that, you know, they're not asking us to do anything they wouldn't do themselves or anything like that. I mean, there's just no leadership at the moment.
Just, and again, Sors, you don't have to comment on this, but I don't know if you saw, Ken Fox had an excellent point this week where he said that watching this government and watching them flip around and actually be more or less like headless chickens, you couldn't help but think of Saoirse McHugh's point of when she left politics to say that that's not the only way to change. We need grassroots. We need, you know, we need local community activism. And that, do you feel a little bit more better about things now?
Well, no, because I was immediately vindicated and have been every single day since I left. But like what, you know, like what Vicky was saying there, it's clear that it's not elected reps that are making the decisions. So why do we think that electing more reps would change that? you know, I saw, what's his name? I can only ever think of him in a sketch. Michael O'Leary.
Yeah.
I was listening to him on the radio. And, sometimes you feel like you're in some sort of alter universe because everyone's, like, just nodding along like, yep, this is okay to have Michael O'Leary talk about health advice. And I remember listening now, Fair Play to Sarah McInerney, a couple of weeks ago now, they had some man from the Aviation Task Force on, along with some fella from an epidemiological office or something like that, and they were talking about this two-week quarantine, and your man from the Aviation Task Force was like, well, it doesn't work. And Sarah McInerney was like, why doesn't it work? He goes, well, I was talking to a woman who flew in from Paris, and she said, and Sarah Fairblader stopped him. I was like, hold on, you're not going to make claims about medical advice based on one woman you were talking to who flew in from Paris. But they do, and they were, and you know,
some of my best friends are 2 week quarantines, so you know, you can't say that about them.
But, just on what you were saying about Eamon Ryan, I'm sorry to be taken over here, but I've seen, like, the one big selling point within the Greens was we'll be this opposition from within. And I think Leo Varadkar has been the best opposition from within, to be honest, not the Greens at all.
The Greens have an agreement where after 3 months they review their position in government. And I'm just thinking, what is it that they're going to learn in the next 3 to 4 weeks that they haven't already fucking learned at this stage? It's just like, come on, lads. The sheet is about 3 feet long at the moment. You know, how much more do you want to put on it?
I think Eamon Ryan nailed his colours to the mast when they were having the debate for the programme for government, where he said they must be in for 4 years. Okay, other people said we'll review, other people said we'd look, other people said this stuff. That was never really, it never looked really. And like his statement the day of the controversy really kicked off on Golfgate about let's move on, just said everything that was wrong about being tone deaf, about being not engaging with the public, and just saying it's time to move on. This is and then I think it was within 6 hours he had pictures of himself on his bike again, launching a new bike lane. And well, more power to him, but it's just really bad optics. The optics are terrible.
I think he should sue the Paul Coors who said that this was going to be senior hurling. I think he should.
That brings me to one thing. Can I say one thing that happened this week again? Again, let's talk about the fantastic journalism that we saw this week about, you know, again, Aoife Moore, Paul Hosford. I don't like to say much, give Paul much prep because he says he's from Cork, but he's actually from Blanchardstown. So and when you're listening to Paul, you'll always be a dub to me. But nonetheless,
but the Irish Examiner is from Cork, so yeah.
Yeah, but he's big. He follows Cork City. He follows Munster. He lives in Blanche. Don't start.
I definitely think this week that the Irish Examiner have
they
you
set
know
the bar, yeah. But
set no,
but
the bar, and I think we can forgive them for being from Cork for now.
Right. Can we say one thing about what was Colette Sexton doing? What was Colette Sexton doing trying to stop a journalist asking a question a week after she took a job as a special advisor going from journalism? It was absolutely appalling. And it's the sort of stuff that we laughed at when Trump's press advisors or Kellyanne Conway, or do you remember the time where he said there was a karate chop when there was no karate chop, where a woman tried to take a microphone from a CNN reporter and he pulled. This is if you start that nonsense and you start going down that road, I mean, whatever about Stephen Donnelly and his business talk of trampolines and people dying in car crashes, your interview was a car crash. Your performance so far is a car crash. You cannot actually interfere with the journalists trying to do their job. And I thought Colette Sexton, personally, as someone who just left a week out, she shouldn't have done it. And it really reflects badly on all the journalists who've gone across and take that route. When one of them does it, it just says, oh God, is this our future? So that's my rant.
It was also the kind of thing where she was saying, oh, you know, I'm really looking forward to this opportunity to make change from within.
Hmm.
Change as in spin, like what change you're actually going to do in the health department, do you know what I mean? Like it really didn't sit right. And then when I saw what happened this week, I was like, mm-hmm.
But one of the things that's really struck me this week is like this really pervasive belief that you can have certain beliefs or attitudes, and whether it's, you know, the speaker at the march yesterday, whether it's the findings about Garda racism, whether it's about judges and politicians attending the golf event, that what they do in their private time is not relevant to how they perform public service, and that they can park it at the door and that they can decide how they'll be accountable. And, you know, it's just not true. Like, we need to have much more open conversations about how the values you hold in your day-to-day life influence how you make decisions in your job, and that you can't separate these things. And that's not how human beings work. We're not robots.
Well, well said, because how many times did we have to put up with the previous government saying, well, that time I headbutted the child, I was doing it in a personal capacity, and I wasn't in my role as a minister, you know, and can't have that crap.
No, and like this idea that, you know, are we happy that somebody has stepped down as a minister but is still a TD? Like, if it wasn't good enough for that, why is it good enough for this?
Can I just say, like, losing the whip is somewhere between a rough tickle and a playful pinch, particularly when they're on holidays. I mean, losing the whip is an absolute nonsense. And that's cowardice in leadership. And it brings me to this point. How does Micheál Martin now put his authority on this government? How does he do it? How do you do it when there's 81 people have to take the chop before you can even have any semblance of authority?
Can I just say one of the stories that came out this week, and it's obviously it's a Paul Corr story, so it's one of these things I've heard that someone else has said and someone else has said, and you don't know who's feeding which lion, and that's the truth of it. But the idea that Leo Varadkar then had a cut at Micheál Martin about, I don't like how you do you're doing business, that is true. But also what's not said is put in the context that it was a Fine Gael idea to just bring it straight to cabinet. So it was really like, you know, let's set a trap, let watch him walk into it, and then say afterwards, I don't like what you're at here. And that is the story that's come out. Again, it's you know, I've heard it from several sources, and I'm not anybody. You know, look at me if you want. I don't care. I just think this kind of stupid Machiavellian bullshit should not be going on when we have a global pandemic, an economy on the floor, thousands out of work, and people stressed about school openings. Which brings us just back onto the school opening. Now, Martin, go.
I'll just ask the question: are we happy? I know I have kids, but those who don't have kids, are we happy that we're doing the safest thing by reopening schools in a situation where numbers are rising, when the WHO have said that reopening schools should not be taken in isolation? It should not be taken in isolation. And it's exactly what they're doing. Exactly what they're doing.
Linda, you have you're in the middle of a place that's in lockdown, and yet the schools are opening.
Schools are opening, and I did record a pod, which is coming out this week, with Samantha Kenny, just about how her family have been left behind. Obviously, she has three kids that are school going, one who is due to start school, who's very disabled. And I touched base with Sam yesterday about what guidelines had come out to her and stuff like that. Her kids are not going back to school this week because it is not safe for them to do so. And she has that decision herself. With no option. They're talking about the kids wiping down the tables themselves and things like that. Like, and she said, like, I've seen my kids wiping down my table. I'm not happy with that. Do you know what I mean? Like, never mind when they're not being supervised in a school situation. So, you know, there are definite, like, that's a family that have to make that decision basically because one of their children could die if she gets this. She will die if she gets this. But on a normal day to day, like, I mean, who's to say that your kids aren't going to kill granny or mom or dad? Do you know what I mean? Like, or the, you know, end up really sick. Or with the long term, we're seeing more and more now about the long term health detriment that even just getting over COVID is having. Like, I have a friend who's gone for an MRI this week because she's tachycardic because of it. And like it, there's nobody talking about that element of things. Like, you know, if you are sick for 5 months and you can't work, where are you going to go with that? Do you know what I mean? Just because your kids have to go back to school, we need to cop on.
But I also agree with Martin's point about this not being an isolation. Like, if they wanted to turn around and said the most important thing right now is opening the schools, so everyone else has to regulate their behavior in this way in order to make that happen safely. But the idea that we can keep doing certain things and have the schools open doesn't work. I've 10 nieces and nephew mostly going to school. I'll happily, you know, if there's educational and social development is the most important thing, like, fine, I'll restrict my movements even more, you know, but we can't have everything at the same time.
That's a very good point. And I just, the other really good point, again, to plug the podcast that Rory did, and I think it was Ciara Riley made the point. She said the schools need to open for more than just one day for a photo op. You know, we need to think that you don't want the idea that they're going to stand there, get a picture and say, well done, you opened the schools. And then in 2 weeks time, just hope that no one is around because they start closing them in groups. We have to go on to the main event, I suppose. The way into it, Vicky, you when we were talking about preparing this, you were making the point about, you know, the one rule for one rule for another, on what happened in Clifton. And then the other thing you made a point about actually was another report about institutional racism again this week. So I don't know, do you want to bring that up first before we have a go?
Yeah, I mean, I just think, like, there was a pretty worrying report in the Irish Times today, based on a study that had been done by a guard. So it was an internal report at that. And I mean, just the opening line, not a single frontline Garda surveyed had a favourable attitude towards travellers. Not a single. And the majority of those that were interviewed were the ethnic liaison officers. They've now, their names changed to diversity officers. These are the ones tasked with doing that work of outreach and engagement with those communities. Now, we have seen definitely at the start of COVID, there was really fantastic reports. Like, the policing authority was speaking to traveller groups that were saying, like, it's like somebody on high said to come and treat us like members of society for the first time ever. So I think we have seen a shift since the start of COVID, and it's going to be a big thing about keeping that going. But we really need to kind of just confront that racism, and probably other, you know, it's probably not just about racism, but, you know, how do people feel about, you know, different classes or persons with disabilities or persons who are trans or sex workers or whatever it is. And, you know, it's that point I was making earlier that we can't think that people are separate. If they hold those attitudes, that's going to affect the decision making on the ground. There's no question. And I feel the same way about judges. You know, when we have a member of the Supreme Court was at that event, I just find that so galling. And, you know, the least likely probably to step down. Nobody seems to think there's even a hint that he'll be removed from office or sanctioned in any way. And what's really interesting about that is that for the first time ever since last month, we actually have a process in this country for dealing with judicial misconduct. We have a new complaint structure, the Judicial Conduct Committee, and we have the potential for independent investigation of complaints. But somehow I doubt that that's going to happen.
Just on the Phil Hogan thing, Brian just sent me the text of his statement, and he's issued his third apology, and his third apology is another one of these of, you know, I've spoken and I've listened to the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste, but I report to the European Commission. And it's like, it's what I did say to Martin actually yesterday. I said, it'll be lunchtime on Monday before, because if he's got to step down, it'll be when he gets back to the office on Monday morning. But nonetheless, it's another thing of saying, there's no even intention of resigning in this statement. So
where does that leave Micheál and Leo?
It means it has shown that they look like powerless, absolutely powerless. And it then speaks to, it gives, as Linda said, it gives more credence to the people who say the EU are unaccountable. It's undemocratic and unaccountable. It gives more credence to that argument. I saw Enda Fanning is here, and Enda made the point, is the Galway tent back? Martin, is the Galway tent back?
I spoke to my dad yesterday, and my dad is an old Fianna Fáil stalwart. He was there, but he used to campaign for Ray Burke and G.V. Wright, all these big names, and he was one of those grubbers at common level. And I said to him, what did you think? He said, sure, it's the same old, the right people, the right shoulders to rub, nothing at all to do with golf. And he's right, 100%. This was, lads, we're back in power. Let's get these wheels back in motion. And it is, and I'm going to say it straight up, it's very worrying to have lobbyists, politicians, and senior judicial people in the same room having a freaking jolly. It is, it's unbecoming of our state, of those who are meant to be taking care of us. And I don't like it. I never did like it. And I think that this is just the beginning of a process. We're going to find a whole load more societies within the Dáil where there is this mixture of the powerful and the money and the decision makers. And I don't like it. And I think it's wrong.
Well, we often say that greed unites them, sort of, but greed unites and also hatred of Saoirse McHugh. But I don't know if...
She's our Greta.
I had to contain myself. I actually had to get Colm to take my phone because Phil Hogan has long been my nemesis, not that he knows this. I haven't had a better day in weeks. I could barely contain myself. And then when it turned out he was lying, I was like, I had a few drinks last night when I saw the Sunday World or something?
Yeah, the golf.
I had to take my phone off me because I was composing the most obnoxious, gloating tweets and flat out tagging Phil Hogan in them. And like, I enjoyed it so, so much. Now, the man does not give a single solitary, he just doesn't care at all. And I was laughing at the whole genre of tweets that were, it's in our interest for Phil Hogan to be there. And I'm like, lads, if you think the man who dismantled county councils, who threatened to turn off our water, who, you know, sent around letters saying that there'd be no travellers living in his constituency, has anyone interest at heart but his own, like, you're delusional. I love him to go, though. But I think the most frightening thing is what Martin's saying, is that, like, there's no minutes taken at these hobnobbing events.
Mm. Tony, you had a great tweet. Tony, you had a great tweet about this.
Did I?
You did.
You'll have to remind me.
I'll have to find it.
There's been a lot. The people who were there. Okay, so Brian Hayes, the head of the Banking Federation, Payments Federation, there was a funny thing today in the Business Post where he said he doesn't think he has to step down because he doesn't think he's lost any credibility. Hands up, I know,
so
Brian.
True.
I know,
so
Brian.
True.
He's saying exactly what I'd say to you, Brian. You've lost no credibility.
You are
exactly who I know you are.
unreal. I mean, talk about leading with the chin.
Yeah. Cell phone of cell phones. But I just...
This idea of the tent being back, like the Council of Europe through GRECO, its anti-corruption body, has been saying repeatedly over the last 3 or 4 years that Ireland is globally unsatisfactory, the worst ranking you can get in its efforts to prevent corruption among politicians and the judiciary. And this is what we see last week. Like, if you want to prevent corruption, you don't let politicians, judges and lobbyists play golf and have an evening of dinner and drinks in the global pandemic, you know, and it was let happen. And who was invited to that event that said no, but didn't kick up a fuss and say this shouldn't be happening right now? It's not just about those 81 people that were in the room. There was a lot of other people who knew about this and didn't go, hold on, you can't do this.
Linda, you have to nail your colours to the mast. You're a member of the Sock Dems, and you do have your party has a position on, I think it's a New Zealand model for anti-corruption that they were trying to push at some stage.
So we very much, it was part of a huge part of our manifesto, and it was one thing because I ran for general election back in January, and it was one thing that we got asked again and again and again: how do you make it more transparent? We need an anti-corruption agency, and we've been looking for it for a long, long time. Nobody wants to know. We've been saying it, Catherine Murphy's been saying it, Roisin Shorthall's been saying it for years. We need, if you are giving out or taking in any kind of public money. So it doesn't matter if you're a government department or an NGO or whoever you are, if you're receiving finance, you have to have full transparency and accountability for every single penny of that. And every single decision needs to be fully transparent. And if, say, for example, you have your developer, the National Children's Hospital, who has a proven track record of going over budget and over time, but always puts the cheapest quote in initially so that they get the contract, then you are barred. You're barred from contracts.
Bam, and the contract is gone.
Yeah. So we need that, and we need to be pushing for that. And, you know, there's no political will there for what government we have now. And I don't know, you know, we'll keep banging the door down and we'll keep saying it until people start to get really pissed off. And what annoys me more so than anything else, yeah, people go into a march because they don't believe, they think it's corrupt and they want to see change. But there's nobody in that camp that's saying what they're going to do to fix it either. Mm. There's nobody saying what needs to be done to hold.
I think we can say very clearly that we know two things that need that could absolutely change the game. And Ken Fox and Simon McGar never ever stop talking about this. First of all, comply with GDPR, both in the letter of the law and the spirit, and the same goes for FOI. Let's have the New Zealand transparency on decision making, therefore you have buy-in from people, therefore people feel involved. You know, if you can see this transparent decision making process, you feel involved in it. But this idea that we have Leo Varadkar coming out to a mic 10 minutes before Micheál Martin and issuing the same statement, we're in pantomime land. Let's get people involved. Let people see why the decisions are made. If meat processing plants are to remain open and, you know, be shut down as soon as there's an outbreak and then reopen again, let's see why that is. How important are they to our system? So, and let's make the judgments based on that, which includes opening schools, which absolutely includes opening schools.
Right, on that note, that's where we will leave this this version of the podcast. The full version is available on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Look, these podcasts, whether it's Echo Chamber, Reboot Republic, Glow West, Pac-Woman Podcast, or the upcoming Policed by Vicky Conway, they're all dependent on your support. So if you can, please head to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. We do exclusive content there now, and it's the feedback has been terrific, and I really enjoyed the Q&A that followed. We have such engaged listeners. Special thanks to Saoirse McHugh for joining us, even though I did kind of drop it on her, lastminute.com. Thanks for listening, folks. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.